Judge Gary Feinerman has a question.
How
sure.
Do Gary?
The question is primarily for Duane, but I'd love to hear Victor and Connie's thoughts if they care to chime in. So, Duane, in your New York Times Magazine piece, you address the paradox, or might be called the bitter irony, that communities of color are over-policed and over-incarcerated, but at the same time, they're under-protected by the police and the criminal justice system. And in the piece and this afternoon, you spoke very movingly about your own personal struggle with that paradox. So my question is, how would you advise a sentencing judge who has before him or her a convicted defendant to think about those countervailing considerations, particularly when faced with a defendant convicted of a violent crime?
Yeah, I think that brings to what I wanted to mention before. I actually don't think we're obsessed with things on an individual level. It seems that way, but we actually don't look at people as individuals. And a lot of the conversation, even this conversation, has moved towards categorizing people as like violent or nonviolent. And so even if the numbers that I suggested just represent a quarter, which I dispute, because you know you have a lot of people in the county jails who haven't been convicted yet, but I'm just focusing on state prisons. Just take that 700,000 people out of the 1,300 that's in state prisons. Each of them went in front of a judge and they were convicted or they pled guilty to a violent crime. And the question is, how should the judge consider who they are as a discrete individual? And we don't have a system that is motivated towards developing an account for who they are. I went in front of a judge, you know, 16 years old, skipped 12th grade, graduated from high school, and done all kinds of like small things in my life that was horrific and some things that were pretty decent, and I was a halfway decent student, but it was no mechanism to get that information in front of a judge. And part of it was because I was in a system that was, you know, that was antagonistic. I mean, the prosecutor was against the defense attorney, the defense attorney was against the prosecutor, and the end goal was not the truth. Moreover, I think the judge is forced to make a decision in a moment, and they're forced to make a decision as if they could predict the future when they can't. And frequently these systems don't have a space in which it allows you to reflect and say, who will you be 5 years from now? Can I see you again 5 years from now? So yeah, I focus deeply and intensely on individuals because that lets me see how the system is broken down. I represent people on parole who have done 20 and 25 years in state prison who are radically different people. And I see how intensely against release the parole board frequently is because they don't know how to account for the fact that you committed a murder and 25 years later you're a different person. But if they let you go, they fear you'll do something else. They just don't know how to account for that, and they're not empowered to account for that. So I would argue that we just need a better series of mechanisms and strategies that allows something that's more akin to what happens on the back end to happen on the front end. First of all, even for people who commit violent crimes, because it seems to be a sort of consensus that if you murder somebody, you should get thrown away, or if you get a robbery, you should just get thrown away. When I just think that's not the reality. And I should say, though, the other great thing that Connie said was resources, resources, resources. Frequently, you have people that get out of prison and they get asked to be on panels and they get asked to be violence preventers, and they don't get paid for it. So they can't support their family, they can't support themselves, and they actually want to have a hand in improving and changing their community, but they don't have the resources to do it. But the main point, I think, in terms of how to address the time in which an individual who committed a crime is in front of a judge, and a judge has the opportunity to at least try to do some modicum of protection of a community in that case, how can they imagine mercy when they feel like they might be abdicating their duty to show mercy? I think that they could imagine mercy if we do a better habit of training defense attorneys to do a more robust presentation of who the individual is before the judge. I mean, the judge doesn't even get a chance to talk to the defendant, you know, even before they sentence them to 30 or 40, 50 years. They aren't motivated to look at them as a whole person. They're motivated to look at them as a crime, and it has to be something that changes the motivation for the decision that gets made at sentencing. And I think, you know, California is one of the places that have rolled back parole for younger and younger people. Virginia just brought back parole for people who got locked up as teenagers, but they still haven't trained the parole board on how to think about what it means to serve 20 years in prison. And so you just still had this point where the policy changes lag behind the actual personal decision-making tools that are needed to make merciful decisions.
Really, just a quick point I want to make to follow up on Dwayne's point here that, you know, folks that have done 20 years and they were in for violent crimes, you know, places like California where we are, you know, hitting sort of a decarceration starting point where folks are, you know, being released in mass numbers, and they're coming out with little resources. And so it's important to think about reentry as the next step and the next show, maybe the next episode, because reentry is so important. Parole boards, probation officers, it's also, we call it, my student and I, we call it the reentry industrial complex. Huge corporations actually sell a reentry curriculum to the state of California. And a lot of my students have shown me this because a lot of my students are former inmates. And now they're, you know, University of California students. And anyway, long story short is that we have to figure out a way to provide resources to folks that have been in there for a long time that come out and give them that dignity and that ability to make a living for themselves and their families.